Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, Texans play on Monday. So we've got Monday to preview the Bucs game. We're gonna do it later in the show again too. In fact, we're gonna do a circle of swarm in about 20 minutes or so. So stay tuned for that. We've now got one regular season game to work off of when it comes to putting this week's circle of swarm together for the Bucs game. Hey, quick prediction too, Seth. Is we just got done talking about the Packers and the Commanders.
Yeah.
On Thursday night, the Packers, if you missed it, the Packers beat the Commanders 27-18, and I would submit that the score was closer than the game actually played. The Packers dominated that game last night. I predict that when we do the power ranking of the power rankings next week, that the Packers will be number one on at least two of the five power rankings. And if the Eagles lose to the Chiefs this weekend, which they very well could, the game's in Kansas City, little revenge game for the Chiefs from the Super Bowl, I think the Packers might be number one across. This Packers thing feels like something, I don't want to say we're being force-fed, but the Micah Parsons trade has really, I think, created this dynamic and narrative for the league where I think they really want the Packers to be the team this year. And I think that I think Micah Parsons, this trade has created a dynamic where he is the chalk for defensive player of the year. Like if he leads the Packers to like a 13-4 record and the one seed in the NFC, he's going to be the defensive player of the year. Jordan Love is going to be in the running for the MVP award. It does feel like this Micah Parsons trade, and the Packers are a popular team, I think, with neutral fans and with the media. I think the Packers are generally a feel-good team, unlike some of the other teams out there.
You know, the funny thing about, I've just seen a little, who knows how he's being treated at large or whatever, but I feel like I see random comments of people saying that, like, I don't know, Micah Parsons not really racking up the sacks. Like, he's very much been an impact. And last week, in a limited, they kind of limited him because of his back and all of that and just being new to the team. But, like, even last night, the box score doesn't tell the whole thing, the whole story, because he drew a couple penalties. Like, he was a huge impact in that game.
Oh, yeah.
But he also does have 1.5 sacks after two games.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
That's, you know, if that's two sacks instead of 1.5, he's on pace for 17 sacks.
Right.
It's, like, very easily. He's doing exactly what they hoped that he would do for them when they brought him in.
There's arguably no more consistent sack artist the last 4 years than Micah Parsons. By consistent, I just mean, like, he's had double-digit sacks every year,
yeah,
and he's averaged 13 sacks. So that means he's somewhere between 10 and 13 or 10 and 15, like every year.
Right, and it's a great illustration, too, of like where, yeah, the sacks don't tell the whole story. Yeah. Like 13 sacks, it's not 19 sacks. He must not be that good. No, it's the overall impact on what he does to an offense.
Yeah.
He was very much that last night.
No doubt. All right, so let's get to the NFL at large this week, and we'll talk Texans here when we do the Circle of Swarm. At about 7:20, 7:25. Because you and I get to sit and watch football all day on Sunday, Seth. That's fun. We don't get to do that often. We watch the Texans, and that's football, but we don't get to watch the league. There's some interesting stuff going on. I'm going to start Jags at Bengals. It's a division game. It's a division team that's ahead of you in the standings. It's your week 3 opponent if you're the Texans, and that's a very watchable game, Jags at Bengals. I think the story in this one, at least the one that intrigues us the most, is Travis Hunter. He only had 6 snaps on the defensive side of the ball. We were told this back in April about Travis Hunter by the magnificent Gladstone.
Yeah, you know, as we sit here, Travis Hunter is a Jacksonville Jaguar, and really what comes to mind for me, right, thinking about the sport of football and really the power of the game itself, right? Its capacity to ignite belief, right? Belief in ourselves, belief in others, right? Belief in achieving what many may deem impossible. Travis Hunter, he embodies belief, right? He's a rare person. He's a rare player, but he's also a reminder that the boundaries of the game of football were built to be challenged.
Mm.
And so the decision to select him was actually a statement for how we plan to move, who we are, and we want him to be nothing more than him.
Ooh.
Because when he is,
deep, man.
He elevates the space around him.
Oh, yeah.
From the football field to the city to the game of football itself.
Wow.
Travis Hunter is who we've been hunting up.
Oh, you
couldn't be more jacked to be sitting right here beside him and introduce you all to the man of the hour.
All right. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, sick. Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, you got to change.
Clap. Yeah. Be sure you clap. Yeah, be sure you clap.
Six snaps on defense in week
one. Six snaps on defense, yeah. 42 snaps on offense. Mashawn, he had six receptions.
For how many yards?
For how many yards, you say? 33. Yeah, there you go.
33 per reception. Wow, that does.
No. Five and a half yards per reception.
Oh, 33 total. Yeah.
It was 33 or 35. Yeah. Sorry if I short-shrifted him on that.
Yeah.
Let me double-check that. Yeah, no, 33 receptions. Yeah.
He is supposedly going to play more snaps on defense this week. And they're going to need him. This just in. The Bengals have pretty good receivers in T. Higgins and Ja'Marr Chase. So.
The Bengals struggled. They allowed a good amount out of the slot receiver last week, apparently. So if they can handle a guy that is churning out 5.5 yards per completion, good luck, Bengals defense.
Out.
I don't know.
Look out.
I bet Travis Hunter. I hope Travis Hunter has 12 receptions for 23 yards this week.
Oh, that would be amazing.
That's redefining football, Sean.
Yeah.
That's redefining what you get out of guys that kind of play both ways.
We're
going to
nibble our way down the field. Yes.
Yeah. They're going to redefine expectations in terms of like they're playing a guy both ways when he's averaging 5.5 yards per reception.
Yep.
That's weird.
That is weird. All right. Next one that I will be watching in the early window, Bears at Lions. Ben Johnson returning to Detroit. And these are two teams that are 0-1 right now. Both of them played division games last week. Bears Vikings, Bears lost. Lions Packers, Lions lost, both 0-1, and it's already starting in Detroit with the new coordinators. This is Dan Campbell getting hit with a question in his press conference this week about the offense under new offensive coordinator John Morton in week one, a week where they were not good offensively. Dan Campbell getting a little chippy.
Just how good the offense was last year under Ben Johnson. People are just wondering, myself just included, would it have been feasible just to even, I know John's a different coordinator, but would it have been feasible to just, you know, Jared talked about changes in communication. There wasn't a lot of pre-snap motion. Would it have been feasible just to run the exact same offense as last year?
What are you asking? What did Jared say?
I'm saying your offense last year.
You said something Jared said, so let me hear it.
Changes in communication.
Yeah, but you said something about emotions and keep.
Yeah, I'm saying that would it have been feasible to, and people are wondering, the offense looks drastically different than it does last year. Would it have been feasible to just exactly run the exact same offense?
So after one game, tell me what it looks like that's drastically different.
Not a lot of pre-snap motions. Explosive plays weren't there. Wasn't as creative. Wasn't as...
You didn't see any pre-snap motions in that game?
As much as we've seen before.
I want you to go back and look at all of our motions, pre-snap motions, fast motion shifts on the road.
Okay.
Yeah, so on the road was the interesting part there because the numbers were a lot different. Like I understand what the guy was going for with the question. He screwed up by not having Jared Goff's direct quote.
Yeah,
that's where Campbell was able to, because Campbell is a coach. Like, listen, when somebody says, "Hey, your player said this,"
he's going
to
call you out on it.
Yeah, you can't go by that, especially if Campbell hasn't heard what he said exactly. Like, all right, I'm going to sit here and play the telephone game with you.
Yeah,
that's where the guy screwed up.
Porter was mealy mouthing. He should have just said, "Hey, it looked different this time."
Yeah,
how feasible would it have been to just run the same system as last year?
I saw a lot of people saying that's the dumbest question ever. I thought, like, it's an interesting question in general. My knee-jerk reaction was that's a dumb question.
Yeah, it's a lot of question. It's a question a lot of fans would be asking.
Yeah, no, and I think it's a fair. And I think it's a fair question.
Yeah.
And it really is, because theoretically, I mean, this is why my dream when Bobby Slowick was hired was, if you can create a situation where you've got a pipeline of coordinators coming up through the ranks, mm-hmm. to where they can basically keep running the same stuff. If you got a lot of smart people in your organization, then you can just pick up and still run the same offense, and the vocabulary doesn't have to change everything else. But I, with coordinators, you know, everybody's they got to speak the language they're comfortable with and call the type of game that they want to call. So it's just more complicated than that. If he hadn't, I think Campbell might have given a less testy answer if the reporter hadn't tried to throw Jared Goff's comments.
Yeah, I think so too. I think so too. And the reporter almost did the thing that's cowardly, but he included himself. He's like, people are saying,
yeah.
Yeah, but he said, including myself. So I'm like, good job. Way to catch yourself, buddy. Yeah. Next one, Patriots at Dolphins. I'm intrigued by this one because Mike McDaniel is teetering on the brink one game into the 2025 season. Drake May and company and Mike Vrabel have a chance to TKO that little worm, Mike McDaniel. Mike Vrabel TKOing Mike McDaniel. This was on, I believe that new Skip Bayless podcast that he's got talking football. Skip Bayless has a new podcast where he's talking football with basketball players. It's the weirdest thing ever. But they had Richie Incognito on yesterday, and Richie Incognito, former Dolphin, not a big fan of Tua Tagovailoa.
Tua is ass. He looks bad. I mean, he is ass. He looks bad. You know, unlucky with concussions, things like that, but there is no rhythm and timing. There's no deep shots to Tyreek. Waddle can't get the ball. They can't get the run game going. They're running all these crazy offensive plays, and nothing seems to work. So that's why I think it makes the Tua situation really, really bad is we know he has it in him. We know he can perform at an elite level in this offense, but what we've seen the last 2 years has been ass.
Started with ass, ended with ass.
Sean, I was I don't think I've ever told you this story. It was a year after I retired. I was on a plane sitting one row behind Richie Incognito. I didn't realize it until I kind of looked up. Like, I was in one aisle seat on the right. He was in an aisle seat on the left. And he said, and I'm sitting there, and my body is still beat up. Like, I was just coming back from, I actually spent like a lot of time at a training facility in Pensacola, just trying to get my body right and everything. And I'm looking at Richie Incognito, and he looked grumpy, like, to begin with and everything. I was going to try to talk to him. I was like, whatever. But I'm just looking, the whole flight, I'm looking at his arm, and he's got all these tattoos and everything, and his arm's just sitting there on the armrest to the right. It's like the size of a normal human leg. And I'm like, no, there's no way in hell. Nope, I am done for sure. Nope. And I can't even remember if this is before or after Incognito had some of his events, you know?
Yeah.
It was probably after. That's why I didn't want to talk to him. Usually if I see a guy on a plane or whatever, I'll introduce myself. I'm like, screw it. I don't need any of this offensive lineman in my life right now.
God, man, I'm just not this guy. I'm imagining being one of the regular people on that flight sitting near the two of you. I'm like, where did all these big people come from?
Oh, we were on a flight into Buffalo, too, but that's, I think that speaks to Incognito's kind of persona.
Yeah.
I expected to see a lot of Buffalonians kind of approaching him. Nobody approached him. Everybody's just like, I'm steering clear of this dude.
That's funny. That's funny.
So, Tua.
Tua's ass.
I mean, everything about that team feels so bad. I feel bad for Dolphins fans because it's everything that you would have worried about either with Tua Tagovailoa and whether he's actually genuinely an NFL quarterback or not. Tyreek Hill at some point is going to explode in an extreme fashion. And Mike McDaniel is just, he should be working somewhere in an anthropology department or something,
yes,
but not coaching football.
Yeah. Okay, let me ask you this. What's the earliest you've ever heard of a team having a players-only meeting? Because the Dolphins had one this week.
They did it already?
Reportedly, they fired off that bullet.
I always try to defend the players-only meeting because there are some teams that have a culture where they've got players-only meetings every week. Yeah. But I saw Andrew Whitworth yesterday, you know, guy with some championship experience, saying, man, as soon as there's a players-only meeting, that you are done for. Sometimes the players only meeting isn't that big a deal, but there's times where it's obviously a big deal. And with the Dolphins, it feels like it's a big deal.
That's the key, I think, with the Dolphins. All right.
Yeah.
Niners are at Saints. And some of you may be wondering, the Niners and the Saints might be the worst team in football. The interesting thing to me here, Seth, Brock Purdy is going to be out for at least a few weeks with a turf toe. So Mac Jones is going to be the starting quarterback for the 49ers. And how wild is this? Let's just take a step back in time here. The Niners wanted to replace Jimmy Garoppolo back in 2021.
Yeah.
So they traded 3 first-round picks to move up to the 3rd overall pick.
And everybody thought it was going to be Mac Jones.
The big rumor was it was going to be Mac Jones. For the longest, it was going to be Mac Jones, and then it ended up being Trey Lance. Trey Lance sucks. So Brock Purdy, Mr. Irrelevant, ends up getting his shot, wins the job, gets to a Super Bowl, gets to overtime of a Super Bowl, gets paid. Now he's injured, and now here comes Mac Jones. Isn't that wild?
Yeah.
Circle of life, man.
It's like what we talked about yesterday. I don't know him anymore. It's such a wild card with quarterbacks these days.
The Niners especially, man.
This is the thing I think where I am with quarterbacks is if you really, really love a guy, by all means, trade up for him. But if you're trading up just because that's a quarterback that's going to be available, I don't think it's worth it anymore.
I agree.
Too many Baker Mayfields out there. There's too many Sam freaking Darnolds. You know, there's all these guys who had been the guys who were drafted high, but then you pick up off the scrap heap later on and you get more out of them.
Week one had Geno Smith, Aaron Rodgers, Justin Fields, and Daniel Jones.
Guys that were either paid for by good amounts or picked up off the scrap heap.
Yeah. It's just so you're right. There's a lot of avenues to get to that quarterback. Now it's 1 week, so we'll see what happens.
Like, I feel like with the way the Texans did it is if you end up earning that number two overall spot. Like whether you love Bryce Young or CJ Stroud or not, I feel like that makes sense that, okay, look, we've got the money in our wallet. We're going to do it. But aggressively trading up for one of these new age quarterbacks that come out of college and you just honestly, they haven't played enough football. The game is still too much different in college than what it is in the NFL. It's just a huge crapshoot.
Yep. All right. Last one in the early, these are all early window games, man. My red zone is going to be cranked up.
Nick Wright thinks you're an amateur for watching Red Zone.
I know.
He doesn't respect your intellectualism.
That's okay.
Because remember, you can't just watch football anymore, everybody. You got to turn it into a calculus test. It's got to be. You're not allowed. You need to be dissecting the all 22 until 3 a.m. if you're a real football fan.
Not to get sidetracked, but we got a little time here. We'll do the circle of swarm in a few minutes. That surprised me with Nick because Nick is a gambler. And Red Zone was made for gambler. For those who missed it, Nick Wright had a take last week that almost won Take-A-Mania. I almost want to throw it back in again this week just to see if
it would
win.
If you're an adult, you watch a whole game.
Your soul mechanism to consume football can't be Red Zone.
You and your leisure time activities, if you're trying to have actual fun, you are doing it wrong.
Yeah, that's it. It should be fun.
How dare you do something you enjoy on a Sunday?
Like me, Seth, and you, Nick, it's not their job. They're just trying to enjoy football. They're not trying to get into arguments with people about football.
This is to win an argument against.
Yeah, you can't argue about football if all you do is watch Red Zone. Browns at Ravens. If there were one that I might just hone in on just because of all the drama surrounding this day in Baltimore, and for those who don't know, the Ravens have chosen this day with the Browns in town to celebrate the 30th anniversary of Art Modell moving the Browns to Baltimore to become the Ravens. Here's Ken Carman, our counterpart, a morning host on 92.3 The Fan in Cleveland, talking about why this is personal.
I think this is really a bleep you to the fans of Cleveland from the organization. Not the fans of the Ravens, from the organization. Because I think that they know that Canton, Ohio is obviously 60 miles away, 50-something miles away from Cleveland. And they have wanted to get Art Modell in the Hall of Fame when he was alive, then posthumously. And they also know that it's probably never going to happen because the voters don't want it to happen because they also think that they know that any chance that they get that they see him on the board, people in Northeast Ohio, which are predominantly Browns fans, are going to boo their faces off. And the NFL doesn't want that look, and the Hall of Fame doesn't want that look because of the history, and rightfully so. So I think it's very, very, very personal from the organization of the Ravens to Browns fans as a giant F you to Browns fans.
Yes. So what he's saying, Seth, because I can see the look on your face, Ken Carman's,
yeah, he lost me there.
Ken Carman's theory is that the Ravens want Art Modell in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
They want him to go in the Hall of Fame. But the reason he's being kept out is because the voters, like John McClain, yeah. know that the optics, that if Art Modell does go in,
yeah.
that Cleveland is going to drive 30 minutes to Canton and boo the hell out of this thing, and the NFL doesn't want any part of yeah. the hallowed, holy ground of the Hall of Fame being sullied with one of the incoming candidates being booed posthumously off the
stage.
I'm a
little surprised by this because Ken Carman would also know, since he's doing his show 57 miles from Canton, that the Pro Football Hall of Fame operates independently from the NFL, and that also the level of conspiratorial thinking that's going into this, I believe it just you're kind of breaking ties with reality. And like, I know Ken knows a lot of those Hall of Fame voters. Like, what are you talking about? Like, you think they're sitting there in a meeting being like, guys, I'd really love to put him in, but you know my stance on this.
Yeah.
I don't want there to be an uncomfortable moment where somebody gets inducted into the Hall of Fame and gets booed posthumously. Okay.
Should Ken's take be in Take-A-Mania later in the show?
Nah.
No? Okay.
I get it. Where he's a Cleveland guy, and it's rough up there, man. Yeah. I don't know. They're just they're lashing out right now.
Yeah,
I get it.
They are. Well, as far as the football matchup goes, these two quarterbacks really like each other. They were in the same quarterback room back in 2018 with the Ravens. Joe Flacco's last year with the Ravens was Lamar Jackson's rookie year with the Ravens. Here's Lamar Jackson talking about how much he loves Joe Flacco.
Just him being in the meeting room and how cool he was with things he would say, like, you know, and how funny he was. Like, I don't know if people know, but Flack's funny, dog. And he used to have me rolling, man, as a rookie, bro. I used to be like, man, this man just say stuff like so nonchalant, like, and it's like, it's great, man. He's a great person to be around.
Joe Flacco, stand-up comedian. Yeah. Didn't strike me as a guy who was bebopping and scotting all over the place.
I think one thing that would surprise people about this matchup is two things. One is that the Browns defense has actually done a pretty good job against Derrick Henry. So yep. In two out of the three last matchups, they've held Derrick Henry to under 75 yards. And then the Browns also, they know about something, about doing something that the Texans have never done, which is in two of their last three outings, they've beaten Lamar Jackson.
Yeah.
So Lamar Jackson, he's completed 55.9% of his passes for 5 touchdowns and 2 interceptions in yep. those three games. So the Browns have had some success against the Ravens. I don't know. I'm guessing maybe one of those games was an end of the season game or what, like a meaningless game for the Ravens.
I don't know. I know one of the wins was engineered by one Deshaun Watson over the Ravens.
Yeah,
so there's that.
That wasn't at the end of the year.
No. That was, I think, Deshaun. I think it was the end of Deshaun's year because I think he got hurt in that game and was done after that. But that's noteworthy for Texan fans is that, the guy – hadn't been great for Deshaun, but the one thing he did do is beat the Ravens as a Cleveland Brown.
This is the one, if I were a hardcore gambler, there is some element of Jim Schwartz, the defensive coordinator for the Browns, versus Lamar Jackson in that offense, where there's there might be something to that.
Maybe.
If you wanted to dig into a matchup, if you're a hardcore gambler like Sean T. Pendergast.
Browns probably should be 1-0. They missed a field goal to beat the Bengals, and they more than doubled the Bengals in number of yards last week. The Browns defense, to your point, held Joe Burrow in that offense fully healthy to 141 total yards last week. I mean, that's an outing right there, man. The last one here, let's get to the circle of swarm. Eagles and Chiefs in the afternoon, rematch of the Super Bowl last year. Chiefs could start 0-2. I got to go look that up. When was the last time? Have they ever been 0-2 in the Patrick Mahomes era? I can't imagine they have been. But the Chiefs, they're actually, if the odds makers are right, the Chiefs are at home going to start the season 0-2 because the Eagles are the favorite in this game on Sunday. So,
I don't know. The Chiefs, I'm not going to the Chiefs defense showing some of the weaknesses or what have you. At some point during the broadcast, they said, well, the Chiefs lost a lot of players of free agency on defense. And they weren't bleeding like from the ears like some teams do. They still have a really good defense, I think.
Who did the Chiefs lose to in week one?
Nobody, I looked it up and it wasn't anything that it didn't.
Oh, the Chargers. They played in the Brazil game last Friday. That's who they lost.
Right. No, but you were saying, I thought you were asking who they lost in free agency.
Who did they lose to in week one? I was asking who they lost to in week one.
They didn't have free agency losses that would predict that somehow they're not going to be a really good defense.
Justin Reed was a good player for them. He's on the Saints now. They lost him. But yeah, no, they, if anything, they were signing guys. They extended Karlaftis. Chris Jones is back. You know, they, yeah, they, so there you go. That's the slate this week.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly you know what why people it's not, outside of Cleveland you know, think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, let's get to it. Circle of swarm time. We got to find six guys to be swarmy this weekend against the Tampa Bay Bucs.
What we're looking for is players, right, who are looking to swarm.
The swarm mindset, that whole mentality.
Right, we want players to have a special work ethic and a relentless mindset in everything that they do. Everything that they do.
Who's in?
This is a special group of men. Believe it.
It's the Payne and Pendergast Texans Circle of Swarm.
Someone said I should have said Trey Lance's ass. I shouldn't have said he sucked. We should follow the incognito credo. He's ass. All right, Circle of Swarm. Seth and I pick. Six Texans we need to swarm in the next game. It's largely based on how swarmy they were in the previous game, with a little sliver of looking ahead as we pick our six guys here, Seth. So you can go first. Who's your first entry into the week two Circle of Swarm?
I will say, and the big suspense item here, everybody, is going to be, will an offensive lineman make a rare appearance in the Circle of Swarm? Stay tuned. Stay tuned.
We won't
be
spoil
sure
it for you. Yeah.
This is what I'm going to do. I'm going to give extra credit for effort on this one.
Yeah.
Sheldon Rankins, who didn't have a huge stat line or anything, had a really nice hit on the quarterback that Stafford somehow incredibly completed the pass. But also, because for a guy that's kind of a longer, lankier guy who isn't known as a run stuffer or anything, there were some elements in that game where he played picture-perfect technique,
yeah,
stuffing the run as a defensive tackle, playing head up on the guard, stuff that I was really impressed by. For all the people that were worried about the defensive tackle position in this offseason, I think Foley Fatakasi and Sheldon Rankins did a really good job in helping limit the Rams to two or so yards per carry in that game, 2.9 yards per carry in that game. So Sheldon Rankins, Circle of Swarm.
I am going to stay in that mode because you just threw a name out there. I thought the defensive line played pretty well in this game, especially the interior. This guy actually got a sack in the game and a TFL, and you just mentioned him, and it's Foley Fatakasi. I think you can't put in Rankins without putting in Foley Fatakasi. I think they both were very swarmy on the interior of that defensive line. Boy, I'm looking at it. It's going to be hard to find six guys this week because the offense was so, I know.
Yeah. Like, even Nico, like, I'd love to just – Nico can sometimes just get a legacy vote, you know. You just throw him in there because you feel good about him. But that's – he matched his lowest output in a game, yeah, other than the Bills game, which we don't count, last year.
Yeah.
Last week with three receptions, that's what he did last year against the Ravens. It wasn't because he wasn't open. It wasn't because the Rams were double teaming him. There was a combination of really just every time he was really open, the pass protection was breaking down, or there was a blitz on, or whatever it might be. So I don't put it on Nico, and yet it wasn't a performance where I can put him in the Circle of Swarm.
All right, who's your second guy in the Circle of Swarm?
So we're in this situation where the Texans allow 14 points on defense, and I can feel myself being hypercritical of them. And when I think about putting Kamari Lassiter in the Circle of Swarm, I also think that, man, some of the things that led to some of his big hits were also things that allowed touchdowns because he was overly aggressive.
He got beat on the touchdown that ended up being the difference in the game.
With great swarm comes great responsibility.
Right.
You know, you can't just, if I give you a grenade launcher, yeah, I can't expect that you're going to be using it on the mailman because he was a few minutes late with your mail.
Ben Franklin said that back in the late 1700s. With great swarm comes
great responsibility.
Been saying it for 400 years now, yeah.
So I'll go with, again, another guy where the stat sheet didn't really, tell the whole story of the performance, Will Anderson Jr.
Okay, Willie, yeah, okay. Thanks for stealing the one I was going to, yeah, that's, we're running out, man. Will was good. Will had the highest PFF score of anybody on the Texans in this game. So he was, I think that's a worthy one.
Oh, no, no, no. And the D-line in general, they were, like, immediately after the game, you're thinking, where did the pass rush go? What the hell's going on?
Yeah.
And then you realize Matt Stafford was getting rid of the ball about a half second faster than he typically does. They did a really good job with the play action. The Rams, to their credit, Sean McVay, big surprise, had a really good game plan versus the Texans, and Matt Stafford executed it really well. So, but Will was doing Will Anderson things. They just
no doubt
they didn't really have a lot of time to get to the quarterback.
Yep. Still had a sack and three TFLs. Will Anderson, if he stays healthy, is going to be in the top three or four on the odds board for defensive player of the year all season long. He's fourth right now. He's tied for third, actually, on the odds board right now. Like, Will is becoming that dude. All right, I'll put an offensive guy in there, Seth. One, Nick Chubb.
Oh, there you go. That's Nick a Chubb. Good one,
yep.
Shauners. Yeah.
Thanks, Sethers. Nick Chubb, who got better as the game went on.
Mm-hmm.
Numbers respectable, especially running behind an offensive line that didn't really look like they'd gotten it together in the offseason here. 13 carries for 60 yards. I feel like they wasted some touches on other guys. It could have easily gone to Nick Chubb. He could have easily had 80, 90 yards in this game if he'd gotten the touches that were given to Dari Ogunbowale or Damian Pierce or Woody Marks. And the good news is that D'Amico Ryans suggested on Texans All Access on the coaches show this week that Nick Chubb is going to get those carries, that we probably should have fed Nick Chubb more in the fourth quarter of that game.
It was one of the things I worried about in week one was, and especially when you don't play any preseason games, like I hate it when you use week one almost like as an experimental lab.
That's what it felt like.
Hey, let's see what works out. We'll just run a few trials and see what works. We'll run a Woody Marks trial. We'll run a Damian Pierce trial. We'll run an Ogunbowale trial. Hey, it turns out, hey, guys, you know what? Maybe if we just run Nick Chubb a whole bunch more, things might have been different. And it's weird to say, like, yeah, Nick Chubb, a little bit of a volume runner. Yeah, how'd that play out? Well, you know, late in the game on his 12th and 13th carry.
So true.
Guys, the old cliche of, you know, getting better as the game goes on is largely inaccurate in the NFL, except that there are some running backs who do operate that way. Derrick Henry is one of them. You can look and see over time that, they do that. I don't know where Nick Chubb is in his career on that, but he feels like that type of back right now.
He was good in the fourth quarter. He came out. He needed a blow when he came out, and that's when they started feeding Dari Ogunbowale. I just wish Chubb had been able to stay in the game, so hopefully he can.
My final pick is going to be one that you're happy about because I know you like doing this kind of thing way more than I do when it comes to the circle of swarm.
Okay, oh, good.
You know who this is. Kaimi, I can't pronounce your full first name, Fairburn. Yes.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm not Mark Vandermeer. I can't put that respect on your actual name.
26
because
letter
I'm
name.
Incapable of doing it.
Kaimi no e aloa me ka ike o ke kumupa.
Oh, you can do that, Seth. Come on.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like it would be more disrespect. It turns into a mockery by the end of it. It would take me 90 seconds to do it, and I'd make three poop jokes along the way.
You're not just satisfying me. You're satisfying a texter that says, hey, guys, you better put our high scorer from the last game in the circle of swarm. He was, though. And those, as has been pointed out by both Nick Caserio and I believe D'Amico Ryans, I know Nick pointed it out on his appearance on Texans All Access each week. Those were not chippies, man. 51, 45, and 53, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
So they were long field goals. I have as you pointed out, I have no problem with that, with Jamie Fairbairn going into. I mean, honestly, we could put Tommy Townsend in too if we wanted to. He punted the ball really well in that game.
Hey, what does that get classified as? Those kind of pavilion stadiums, does that get classified for the kicker as kicking indoors or outdoors?
That's a great question, because, SoFi is sort of a hybrid indoor-outdoor stadium.
They have to follow the lightning rules for an outdoor stadium.
It must be outdoors, then.
And for kickers, I guess, there's probably enough the potential for wind coming through.
I was going to say, if there's wind coming through,
Feels like a little cheaty. I feel like if you're a kicker, you want the credit for the outdoor stadium. So I feel like the kicker gets like, I did that in an outdoor stadium.
Especially Kaimi, who's not been great kicking outdoors.
Yeah.
You know, he missed those missed extra points in the playoff game against the Chiefs and the regular season game against the Chiefs.
They need to add an asterisk to the Pavilion Stadium.
Yeah, I'm for that. All right, so we could go Towns in here, but I'm not going to. I'm going to go Henry Toa Toa. Toa Toa was swarming. You know, he got a 15-yard penalty. It was inadvertent, I think, but he got it because he was swarming. He had a TFL. He had a sack in that. He had the first sack of the season for the Texans.
And then, you know what? That was a very swarmy sack because he just ran through a cut block.
Yeah.
You know, that was a pretty badass sack. Yep. Yeah, good call on that one.
Okay.
And also, yeah, look, and he did the whole thing about Toa Toa, as we know, is he does not discriminate. You know, if you're a Rams fan saying, like, hey, why'd you hit Puka like that? Like, oh, he almost took Derek Stingley out of the game, too.
Right. Okay.
I mean, he did. He took Derek Stingley and Puka Nacua out of the game momentarily.
Yep. All right. So this week's Circle of Swarm. Wow. Sheldon Rankins. Yeah. Fully fun. This is no disrespect to any of these guys, but I'm telling you, there is a correlation between winning and names like Danielle Hunter and Nico Collins being in the Circle of Swarm.
This is a blue-collar Circle of Swarm.
Very blue-collar, very lunch pail. Sheldon Rankins, Foley Fatakasi, Will Anderson Jr., Nick Chubb, Kaimi Fairbairn, and Henry Toa Toa.
You know, by way of who they rewarded financially after this game, it should have been Tommy Togiai, who didn't even play in the
game. Who was inactive? He's swarming to the bank, I tell you.
Nobody earned more money on a per-play basis last week than Tommy Togiai.
Oh, my God. How did Nick Caley do in his debut as Texans OC? We'll hear from D'Amico Ryans. We'll hear from C.J. Stroud on that as well. We will do that coming up next. But you got an injury report, Seth.
The Mokarem Injury Lawyers Injury Report. Here's what you need to know. Jake Andrews with a high ankle sprain did not practice yesterday. Neither did Christian Kirk nor Braxton Berrios. So all eyes go again to Jalen Noel. Can the young slot receiver play a little bit more like a veteran this week? Can CJ connect with him more? Ed Ingram had limited participation with an abdomen. And I don't know what to tell you about an abdomen injury that isn't an appendicitis or something like that, but he's got an abdomen strain. Full participation, Blake Fisher. There's your Mokarem Injury Lawyers report, brought to you by Mokarem Injury Lawyers. If you've been injured in an accident, call 281-222-2222 or visit MokaremInjuryLawyers.com.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns.
And you're seeing exactly
you know why it's not
outside of Cleveland.
You know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, D'Amico Ryans, how did Nick Caley do in his debut as offensive coordinator for the Houston Texans in week one?
Nick did a good job, right, with the play calls. At the end of the day, we all have to just put ourselves in position where we can actually call the game, right? We're behind the sticks a lot, shot ourselves in the foot a lot, where we're in second and long. And just third and long a lot, that's not a great place to be as the first time play calling your first game. So if we can play well together and stay on schedule, stay on track, then we can see how the game is called.
Okay, one more, Seth, before I want to get your thoughts on this, because it seems like they're giving Nick Caley a pass on week one. C.J. Stroud said something similar to D'Amico Ryan. Said, we got to help Kales out.
We got to help Kales out, man. I think that's my biggest thing personally. And I think for the guys is not giving – what play are you going to call on second and 15, second and 25? And we've had these problems for years, you know. So third and 14, third and 12, like you can't live in that. And we do our coach a discourtesy of that when that's controllable by us. So I think that's a start. Personally, I got to be better just – pocket movements and, you know, checking the ball down when I need to check it down. And at the same time, staying aggressive. So, I think we just need to build a rhythm early on better. And I think we'll be better from that.
The thing that, you know, I think I agree with everything CJ said there, obviously. But also, I think that when you've got two rookie receivers on the field, and Higgins was on the field a lot more than Jalen Noel, I'm going to give CJ a bit of a pass early on is that I think there were times where things weren't just exactly right with both Higgins and Noel. And without knowing exactly what their rules were in specific situations, I think that there were just times where, man, it looked like it should have gone to Noel, but it probably, the timing was probably a little bit off compared to Kirk. Or it looks like it could have gone to Higgins, but Higgins wasn't exactly where CJ wanted him to be, and that's when he takes a sack. So some of those things you expect, you just got to iron them out, and you're going to get it from rookie wide receivers. They don't get the precision that they need in the NFL yet. So a lot of that stuff, it would be a lot easier if the Texans were coming. If Bobby Slowick had been an awesome offensive coordinator last year and he was a head coach somewhere else and Nick Caley was now his replacement, it would be a lot easier to say, like, okay, well, look, these are hiccups and what have you. The problem is a lot of that, what we saw, looked like exactly what we got last year.
Yeah.
And it's harder to give that benefit of the doubt. But I'm consciously forcing myself to do that, because the real difference between Nick Caley and Bobby Slowick needs to be, how does this young offensive coordinator improve over the course of the few weeks and iron out some of these issues that you saw in the first week?
Yeah.
That's the test right now.
And it can only be a few weeks. Like, this is, you know, the Texans, this is not a rebuilding season. This is not a growth season. This is not a developmental season. This is a season where you're spending a lot of money on guys, and you're about to spend a whole lot more money on some other guys to go win a Super Bowl, to go get to the AFC Championship game, at least. I mean, that is the stated goal from the head coach, is to take this team to new heights, to the AFC title game. He's openly said that. And so it can only be a few weeks that you're ironing these things out. You can't still be doing this in week 10. Not against this schedule, you can't be doing it. So C.J. Stroud was also asked about Nico Collins getting 5 targets in the game. I think it was Sarge who asked the question, hey, what's it like playing with a guy like Nico who, when he's not getting targeted, isn't demanding you to throw him the football? And CJ kind of almost corrected him a little bit on that.
Yeah, I mean, it's great. You know, I like because Nico is that way, but also, like, he demands the ball. He wants the ball. And, you know, it's our job to find ways to get it to him. And I thought we could have, you know, definitely I could have done a better job of getting him the rock when he was open. And, I think he's going to show up big time. Every dog has his day, you know, and Nico's a growling at the mouth like a Rottweiler trying to get that ball. And so I'm excited to see. And, you know, I'm always looking for 12, man. That's never a question. So, he'll be all right.
Yeah, go over on Nico targets this week in your daily fantasy.
Look, and I think, and honestly, it's interesting because now that they have the iPads on the sideline, or the tablets, the Microsoft Surface tablets on the sideline, I don't think you don't need the wide receiver yelling, you know, about how he should have gotten the ball or anything anymore, because they are looking at it and seeing exactly how it was. And Nico was open in that game. It's not like he was never open. There was a combination of circumstances, I think, where it just felt like every time he was open, there was pressure in the pocket or there was a blitz. And there was time where I think CJ had an unblocked blitz by design coming off the edge. Two running backs, or two tight ends, both Cade Stover and Dalton Schultz, ran past the blitzing defensive back without really giving much of a jam on the way out. I don't know if they were supposed to or not, but CJ did what he should have done in that situation, or at least what he, you know, is very much what you want him to do, is he threw it to Dalton Schultz and got positive yardage out of a blitz and didn't get hit, all that. Nico was wide open on that. So the circumstances, it's not like CJ wasn't looking for him. CJ was making the smart decision on that one. There were another couple times where Nico was wide open, but the pressure got home. Mm-hmm. So I felt better about Nico himself, and I didn't really want to criticize CJ for not finding him more often, because that's just kind of the way the cookie crumbled in that game. If the process is that they're also going to try to have a more diverse offense than just trying to get the ball to Nico Collins as much as possible, I like that part of the process. You just got to actually, you know, be successful with that
process. You got to score touchdowns. You got to score points. And Nick Caserio said that when he was asked about the whole Nico dynamic in the offense when he was doing his hit with John and Mark this week. And he pointed that out. He's like, you know, we did have however many guys, you know, nine guys touch the ball on offense. And several of them were very productive plays. I think several of them were plays that we've been almost requesting of CJ this year, which is like, hey man, just take the quick stuff and don't, you know, try not to get hit so much. Try not to hold the ball so much back there. So, yeah, I mean, there were some good things, but, yeah, you can't – D'Amico said it himself. You can't finish with 9 points. Like, they got into the red zone and cashed in twice. The Rams did. They scored two mm-hmm. touchdowns. We got in the red zone once, didn't cash in at all, and kicked 3 field goals. There you go, 14-9.
And that's how Kaimi Fairbairn ends up in the Circle of Swarm. For this
yes, yes.
Kaimi's on the sideline counting up his Circle of Swarm appearances, like, and he's just like, oh, keep stalling out.
I'm so swarmy right now over here,
the
just chilling.
The sweet taste of this Circle of Swarm,
that's it. All right, let's into the 8 o'clock hour we go. We'll get to 5 Reasons I Hate You for Tampa. At 8:20-ish, 8:20, 8:25. We'll do that in a couple of segments. We've got Take a Mania coming up at 9 o'clock. Let's circle back to the Astros here. It is getting dire. The margin for error is almost non-existent for the Astros right now after yesterday's debacle in Toronto. And you can tell what they're doing with the pitchers here is they're setting things up over the next couple of weeks. We'll get to that with the Astros as well coming up next.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns.
And you're seeing exactly outside of Cleveland, think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.